Bats are often associated with evil, bad luck, witchcraft, and even with disease. Chiroptophobia is a fear of bats that is apparently common. Why is this, and what's the real story on bats? Welcome to Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. I'm Salwa Khan. Bats are unique in that they are furry mammals that fly, some reaching speeds of 100 miles per hour. They eat literally tons of insects, in the process saving crops and money for farmers. Some bats pollinate fruit, including some species of banana, mango, and agave. There are other remarkable facts about bats, and we're going to hear about that from Allison Brokaw, a behavioral ecologist, bat biologist, and author of a book called The Weird and Wonderful World of Bats, demystifying these often misunderstood creatures. I asked Brokaw how her interest in bats began.
Growing up, I knew I wanted to study wildlife since elementary school, and we used to see bats flying around the fields and forest near where I grew up. And every time we would see them, one of my parents would sort of point up and say, "Look, Mrs. Bat has come to visit." And so I kind of grew up with affection for bats. And then as I got older and was pursuing a career in ecology, I started to learn a little bit more about bats and became really fascinated with how diverse and varied they are, and realized that there was still a lot that is left to be uncovered about bats. So that was a very exciting idea. There's, you know, still things that we're learning about these really cool animals.
So how many species of bats are there?
There are 1,487 currently recognized species of bat.
And they vary, I assume, in different ways.
Bats are hugely diverse. They vary in size, everything from relatively large flying foxes that people may be familiar with in places like Africa and Australia, as well as very, very small. Some of the smallest are, you know, smaller than an adult hand. So they come in a whole range, and they live almost everywhere on Earth. You can pretty much go anywhere on the planet, with the exception of Antarctica, and chances are there's going to be at least one species of bat that lives there.
Now, in your book, you say that bats are closer in an evolutionary sense to deer and whales and dogs than birds, which is intriguing. Tell us about that.
I wanted to highlight that because I think we often think of bats as flying mice or flying rodents. They have a lot of similar characteristics to rodents, but they are in fact more closely related to the group of mammals that includes the carnivores and the hooved animals. So I like to joke that they really are sky puppies or flying dogs. And they are, humans are probably more closely related to rodents than bats are.
Why are they so important to our world, to our environment?
Yeah, so bats play a really important role in a variety of ways in their environment. They are pollinators. So there are species of bat that feed on nectar. And so when they are visiting flowers, they help move pollen around, which helps plants reproduce. Many fruit-eating bats are also seed dispersers. So they eat a bunch of fruit in one location, and then as they're out flying around, they poop out the seeds in new locations, which helps plants spread farther than they maybe would via just wind. And then about 70 to 80% of bats on the planet are primarily insectivorous. So they eat insects and other arthropods. And so they play a really important role in pest control, both for human systems, things like protecting agricultural crops, but also protecting forests and other more natural plant ecosystems, helping make it so that trees aren't being eaten away by pests.
Are there specific insects that eat that damage food crops? And does that help the farmer?
Yeah. So bats, particularly the free-tailed bats, both in North America and in places like Asia, are kind of the best example of this. They like to eat insects like the bollworm moth, which attacks cotton and corn crops. And in Asia, there is this group of insects called plant hoppers, which really like to eat rice crops. And so these big colonies of bats sort of in the southern United States and in Asia go out and they love to eat those particular insects. It's estimated in the United States alone that bats are have an economic value as pest control, either through, you know, eating pests or reducing pesticide use, of around $22 billion a year.
Apparently, there are many possible items on a bat's menu. You talked about insects and fruit. What else?
One of the fun things about bats is that most things that we can think of an animal may be eating, there's probably a bat out there that eats it. The only exception is there are no scavenger bats, so bats generally aren't eating dead animals. But there are, so yeah, lots of bats eat insects. They eat other kinds of arthropods, such as scorpions. There are bats that will pluck spiders off of their webs while flying. There are bats that eat all sorts of different types of fruit, bats that drink nectar from many different types of flowers. There are bats that are carnivores. So there is a whole range of bats that eat other vertebrates, everything from small rodents to lizards. There are bats that eat birds, and there are even bats that will eat other species of bat.
Let's go to how they move around and how they hunt. So they use something called echolocation to hunt when it's dark outside. Tell us about echolocation. What is it, and why can't we hear the sounds that they emit?
So echolocation is used by most bats as a primary way of getting around, and it is basically using sound and the echoes of sound to detect objects. So bats are shouting into the void, and then they are listening for the returning echoes to come back. And then their brains are able to do these computations to, you know, estimate how far away an object is, maybe how big an object is, even texture of an object, simply based on the characteristics of the echo that comes back. And most bats are doing this at sound frequencies or pitches that are just physically above human hearing. So humans, we max out hearing tones between 18 and 20 kilohertz, and that we lose that ability as we get older. So there are sounds that, you know, children and teenagers can hear that adults can't. Bats are producing sounds that are even higher above that frequency. For the most part, there actually are a few species of bats. One example I can think of is the spotted bat, which is this gorgeous bat that's found in the southwestern United States. They have this black fur with white spots, these huge ears, and they actually produce echolocation call that are around 12 kilohertz. So it will sound like a high-pitched chirp, almost sounds like a bird is out flying around in the middle of the night. So there are a few exceptions where humans can hear the bat echolocation calls.
So when they're getting these echoes back, it's going to be, in some cases, just on a tiny insect, right? Is that right?
Yeah. And one of the reasons that bats tend to use these really high frequencies is that can give more detail. So it's kind of like the difference between painting with, you know, a giant paintbrush versus trying to paint something with, you know, a really tiny brush to get at details. The higher frequencies are better at getting those details.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan, here with Alison Brokaw, a behavioral ecologist and bat biologist, and author of the book The Weird and Wonderful World of Bats. So when bats don't echolocate, what senses are they using to hunt?
Yeah, so contrary to the common saying, bats are not blind. All bats are able to see. How well they can see varies on the bat. Some bats are not very good at seeing detail. They can only really see, you know, broad shapes, but they can detect light. Some bats are better. Some bats even can see into ultraviolet wavelengths, so they can see into parts of the color spectrum that humans cannot, which seems to be more common in nectar feeding bats. So it's thought to be important for bats that are trying to find flowers that are reflecting ultraviolet light. Bats also use their sense of smell. So my particular line of research was actually on how fruit bats use smell to find and discriminate fruit. So bats can use their sense of smell to tell the difference between ripe and unripe fruit. They can use smell to decide on their preferred fruit. So they can tell the difference between what a fig smells like versus what a, an apple might smell like, for example. And so they can use that to sort of make decisions while hunting. They may also be able to use smell cues as a way to sort of help orient them, to sort of say like, oh, there's a ripe tree over in this direction and not in that direction. Kind of the same way that we humans, you know, we tend to primarily use vision, but we can use hearing, we can use our sense of smell to sort of, you know, navigate our world around us. Bats and other animals do very much the same thing.
You say that bats exhibit behaviors similar to humans. What kinds of behaviors?
One of my favorite examples is singing. So, right, humans, we love music. We sing, we listen to song. And there are actually not that many other mammal species that produce what we would consider songs. And bats are one of these groups of mammals that produce song. So there are bats that can produce these really complex songs that they use for courtship. So they use it to attract mates of the other sex, or they use it to scare off potential competitors of mates. Some of the bats, these songs can get really complex, so they can have distinct syllables. So sort of think of distinct sets of sounds that the bats can mix and match to put into one long song. So, the same way that we might sing a love song to impress a partner, bats will do the same thing.
And these songs, are they things we could hear, humans could hear?
It depends on the species. So there's only a few species that produce these songs. Some of them, parts of the song does fall within human range, but there is also parts of the song that, you know, we humans are missing out on some of the details and the complexity.
Yeah, I'd love to hear one of those songs.
Yeah, it basically sounds like really high-pitched little chirps and trills.
And then they also live in large groups. Is that something that's similar to how humans live?
So bats form a range of sort of social group size. So there are some bats that form these gigantic colonies of millions of bats all living in one cave or in one area. Some of the carnivorous bats that I mentioned, the ones that eat other vertebrates, they actually do form what we would consider sort of little family groups where there's a male and female parent who, they give birth to a young, and then the juveniles actually stick around for a year or two. And so it sort of results in this multi-generational little family group, all living together and potentially sharing food. So there's really a range.
You're listening to Mothering Earth. I'm Salwa Khan here with Allison Brokaw, behavioral ecologist and bat biologist. As I understand it, bats live long, and in the book you talk about studying their immune systems, which may be key to breakthroughs in human medicine. How does that work?
Yeah, so bats are mammals just like humans, and because of that, there are a lot of similarities in the way that their cells and their bodies work to how human cells and bodies work. So by studying sort of what bats might be doing differently or better compared to humans helps us make some of these connections. And bats are particularly interesting when it comes to longevity and aging. Because of the 19 species of mammal that are known to live longer than expected relative to humans, because humans are actually, we're pretty long-lived for our body size. But of the 19 species that live longer than us relative to body size, 18 of them are a type of bat. So scientists have been looking at the genomes of these bats to see what parts of their genes are maybe different from humans, and what does that mean for the mechanisms by which cells are dividing or being maintained. And so if we can identify those specific cell pathways and processes, then that helps us understand how it might apply to humans and then potentially find ways to mimic those processes.
Sounds good. There are many stories that picture bats as ominous and evil. People may be afraid of them. Let's go through some of the myths about bats. You mentioned blind as a bat. Obviously, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the thing about bats are bloodsuckers and vampires. Now, there are vampire bats. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there are vampire bats. Of those over 1,400 species of bat, only three are vampire bats. All three species are found only in Central and South America. They all belong to the leaf-nosed bats. So it's a group of bats. Two of the three species are actually specialized. They prefer to drink the blood of birds. And then the third species, the common vampire bat, which is the one that people may be most familiar with, they prefer to drink the blood of mammals. And speaking of sort of social interactions, the vampire bats are really interesting because feeding on blood is a very specialized diet. Blood does not have a lot of nutrients. It is mostly water. It is really high in things like iron. And so, you know, having this really specialized diet means that vampire bats have to feed pretty much every night so that they don't starve. But if a bat misses a meal for some reason, it can't find an animal to feed from, its roost mates, bats that it interacts with regularly, they will actually share blood meals. So they will share some of the blood that bat had eaten earlier with the bat who didn't get a meal that day. And then they'll, you know, if one bat helps another bat one night, then that bat may help that bat a different night in sort of repayment.
Wow. And when you say they feed on mammals, which, like, give us some examples. What would be an animal they feed on?
Yeah, so they would have evolved to feed on large native mammals, so things like tapirs and, antelopes. Now, in a lot of regions, they are feeding on cows and pigs and horses, kind of the large mammalian livestock that people may have. That's sort of become one of the main food sources for them.
And are they drawing a lot of blood? I mean, how much blood are they taking?
Not very much. So a bat is probably taking 1 to 2 teaspoons of blood a night. So pretty small amount. The vampire bats themselves are not very large. Their bodies are about the size of a human palm.
Another common myth is that all bats are rabid.
Yes, so that is a myth. All mammals, which includes bats and humans, are susceptible to the rabies virus. However, if we look at the data for bats that have been submitted for rabies testing to places like the Center for Disease Control, only around 5% of the bats that have been tested come back positive. And just for comparison, of the raccoons and skunks and foxes, other common mammals that humans might encounter, of those that have been submitted for the same testing, between 10 and 20% of them come back as positive. So it is always a risk. Bats are susceptible. There is not a lot of data for what the sort of frequency of rabies may be in, you know, free living, natural, healthy populations, but it's thought to be, you know, 2% or less, down to even less than 1%.
I understand some species of bats are threatened with extinction. Why is that?
It depends on the species what the specific cause is, but bats in general are experiencing threats from a variety of sources, including habitat loss and habitat fragmentation, loss of habitat through either agricultural development, urbanization. Other sources of issues are invasive predators. So domestic cats in some places are a really big risk for bats. Some bats have been, particularly in North America, have been hit really hard by an invasive fungus in the form of a sort of a fungal disease. In some areas, bats are unfortunately still persecuted and killed because people, you know, think they are dangerous or are afraid of them. In some places, bats are hunted for food and for sustenance.
Where are the places people can go to see bats?
We are actually very lucky in the United States. We have the world's largest bat colony, which is in central Texas. It's the Bracken Cave Preserve. There is a colony there of Mexican free-tailed bats that reaches as many as 20 million bats in the summertime. And they all emerge. It takes several hours for them to come out of the cave. You can get tickets to see the bats come out through Bat Conservation International. There are some other large colonies, mostly in Texas, but sort of throughout the southern United States. Austin, Texas, there's a big bridge in downtown Austin that also has a large colony of free-tailed bats. So those are some of the sort of tourist areas, but if you just want to, you know, see a few bats flying around in your local area, good places to look are water sources. So places like local lakes or ponds, you can often see, especially in the summertime, see bats flying over and getting drinks of water in places like that, which can be really fun to watch.
If you're a gardener and you wanted to attract bats to your garden to eat, so they'd eat some of the pests, what do you do?
Yeah, so something that bat conservationists have been talking about a lot recently is sort of these bat gardens. So really, really advocating for planting native plants where possible, because native plants are going to weirdly attract insects, but it's insects that bats like to eat. And sort of if, you know, you provide a little mini buffet, the bats are going to come by and eat whatever they find, which is going to be, you know, the bad stuff too. So really, you know, planting native when you can, helping support sort of native ecosystems is always a good thing. Doing things like minimizing the amount of lights you have on outside your house can be a good way to help support bats and bring bats into an area. Yeah, those are kind of the big ones and sort of the most straightforward, I think.
Will putting up bat houses attract bats to your garden?
Yeah, bat houses can be part of a sort of way to support your local bats. One thing I like to remind people if they're thinking about putting up a bat house is to first do some research on the types of bats that are found in your specific area. Not all bat houses are the same, and not all bats like the same things in a bat house. Some bats like to be really crammed in as much as possible with their fellow bats. Other bats, you know, prefer a little more space. They have different temperature preferences. So some bats like it really hot. Some bats don't. So it's always good to sort of check in, see what is in your area. And then there's different bat house designs that might work best for different species. There's a lot of advice, again, depending on the type of bat that is in your area, of, you know, how high to mount it, and then just being patient. It can sometimes take bats a few years to figure out that there's this, you know, great new spot to hang out.
Are there any precautions you should take if you're around bats?
So if you're just out, you know, taking a walk and you see some bats flying above you, you know, you're not at risk for anything. I often get people asking me that because they're concerned because like a bat flew by next to them, that you're not at risk in anything. Rabies and most is transmitted only via bite. If you do encounter a bat, say one is in your house or you find one on the ground somewhere, and you need to capture it and move it, wearing gloves, plain old garden gloves or like driving gloves even will be better than nothing. And then in that situation, I always recommend once you get the bat maybe contained into a safe space where it's not going to encounter children or pets or get stepped on, is calling your local bat rehabilitator. They can give you the most, you know, relevant information and tips on what to do in your specific situation. And if necessary, they can take the bat into their custody and make sure that it is, you know, healthy and ready to be released.
Do you have a favorite story about bats?
I'll plug for Bracken Cave again. If you ever have a chance to go, it is quite spectacular. The bats come out of the cave. The cave itself is sort of set down into the ground, and sort of there's this slope leading to the opening of the cave. And so for the bats to leave, they have to kind of spiral upward, and it results in what is affectionately referred to as the Batnado. So these bats, just thousands of them, are pouring out of the cave. They're forming this big bat tornado. You can just, the sound of their wings flapping is very loud, and it's just really amazing. You feel like you're right in the heart of it, as these bats are emerging and going off to do their thing. It's I have had very few experiences like that.
That's all for now. This has been Mothering Earth on the Weird and Wonderful World of Bats with bat biologist and author Allison Brokaw. Thanks so much to her, and thanks to you for listening. Our website is mothering-earth.com. Until next time, this is Salwa Khan signing off for Mothering Earth, your source for sustainable living news. The views and opinions expressed on Mothering Earth do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of this station.